My name is Ted Baker. Dr. Ted Baker, I'm from the McGill Counseling Service, which is right over in the Brown Building over here, part of Student Services. And I'm here today to talk to you a little bit about some of the resources that we have available for students and some of the difficulties that you may encounter while you're here at McGill and how to address those so they don't impede your academic success and progress in any way. I want to say welcome, but you've heard that before. I want to say congratulations on being accepted to McGill, having the opportunity to come here, but you've also heard that before. And I also want to say thank you. I want to say thank you for coming to McGill, for accepting to come to this university, because many of you have probably had other opportunities to go to other places, and you have chosen to come here. Now, the university goes around saying, oh, aren't you students lucky? So many people apply, and you were accepted, so you need to be grateful for coming here, and thank us for letting you in. But I say, no, 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 no. The university should be happy about you accepting to come here, because you are the university. Without you, there is no university. Let me tell you something. I spend my time here in the summer. And it's a terrible place to be. Don't tell the administration I said that. It's a terrible place to be because it's deadly quiet. It's boring. It's dull. You have these old white-haired guys shuffling around the campus from one building to another half the summer. And you wonder whether it's a university or a graveyard. Then you guys arrive in August, and all of a sudden this becomes a university again. It's filled with excitement, it's filled with vitality, it's filled with noise, it's filled with excitement, and all of a sudden we're back in business again, and I really appreciate that. You are the university, and we are grateful that you have decided to come here. I just ask one question. You know, I'm always interested about where people, and I'll talk a little bit about this later, I'm always interested in why people choose to sit where they sit. You know, we have the keeners up front here, over here. We have the slackers in the back, maybe. They can close their eyes. Nobody knows that they're taking a little nap back there. They're near the door, so they can run out if they don't want to stay if I'm boring them. It's always interesting, but I'll talk about a little bit about that later on. Now, I'm the director of counseling, as I said, and one of the things that happens in counseling is the students come to us when they're experiencing difficulties, personal, academic difficulties. But I'm here to remind you that even though you've arrived at this great university, even though you've been very successful to date, you may encounter some problems along the way, and it's very important for you to know that Student Services is there. Our motto at Student Services is supporting student success. And there are 10 services, 140 people who work in Student Services to ensure your success. We have a goal of making sure that your time here is a successful one and that you arrive at graduation. Now, it wasn't always like that. And I'm a good living example of somebody who knows the difference, because I was a student back in the day when there were no student services. And I'm here today with what we have built in for you now. And I can see the difference in the contrast. Back in the day, let me just tell you what my experience was at going into a university for the first time. I was accepted, like you, to a large university in a big metropolitan area down in the States. And when I was accepted, like you, I got a letter saying, congratulations, you've been accepted. We have an orientation for you, and you can't miss this orientation, because we're going to tell you everything that you need to know about being successful at this university. So I was all excited, you know, as a frosh. I was, oh, I better not miss this meeting. And I lived out of town at the time. So I got my mother to pack a suitcase for me, and it was this big leather suitcase wrapped, with rubber band things. And she packed everything I owned. I think she might have been a little bit happy to see me going, but she packed this huge suitcase, and I got on the train, and I came into town, And I arrived a little bit late because the train arrived a little bit late, but I didn't want to miss this orientation because orientation is very important. The letter told me so. So I rushed to an auditorium, not quite like this. We didn't quite have the facilities in the day. It was like more like a gymnasium, flat with the metal chairs. And of course, I got to the place and I was a little late. The only space that was available, because they had all of the freshman class coming in, the only space that was available was right up front. You know, it's a lot in the front seats are empty in classrooms. People prefer the back seats are all crowded, but the front seats are empty. So I arrive at this auditorium, and I have to come in a side door, and I have to make my way across the front. And everybody stops talking, of course, as I arrive late with my big suitcase. And I shuffle over to the seat, and I sit down because I didn't want to miss this orientation because they're going to tell me what it takes to be successful in this university. And I wait, and I wait, and I wait. And there's these old gray-haired guys with ties up on the podium. Notice it's still an old gray-haired guy, no tie. We're really making progress here. And I'm waiting for the message, and I'm waiting for the message, and I can't remember any of it anymore. It's all gone, except for one thing, which I'll never forget. This was orientation for me. The old guy at the front, who I assume was the president of the university at the time, told us all, we're all sitting, remember, in these metal chairs, he tells us, everybody look to the right. So 1,000 people all look to the right. And then he says, everybody look to the left. And 1,000 people all look to the left. And then he says, 2 out of 3 of you will not be here for graduation. That was the end of orientation. The assumption was, in that day, that if you were good enough to get into the university, you were good enough to handle whatever was thrown your way, and you were smart enough to do well academically, and if you weren't, we didn't want you to graduate. So everybody was basically left on their own. And that created a lot of difficulty. Several good friends of mine did not make it to graduation simply because they encountered difficulties that they could not handle on their own, and no one was there to support them. It's very different today, as I've said. Now you've got these 10 student services. You've got these 140 individuals all dedicated to your success. Promoting student success is our motto, and we live by that, and we're really focused upon that. Now, McGill has a goal for you, and the goal is that you graduate and that you are happy when you graduate. And you might ask, well, what the heck does McGill care if we're happy or not? Well, the reason McGill wants you to be happy, wants you to get through, first of all, to be a graduate, they keep giving money as long as you're here. They want you to be happy when you graduate because as soon as you graduate, you're going to get a letter from McGill. And that letter is going to say, congratulations on graduating. You're now a member of the alumni, the big happy McGill family. Send us a check. As soon as you graduate, McGill is going to, I guarantee it, change your address as soon as you graduate. Or that letter will arrive within weeks saying, send us a check. And I'm a graduate of McGill, and I dutifully have been signing my checks for many, many years because I do, and I still appreciate the education I got here. I did have a very happy, positive experience. I did appreciate it, and I do send in my check, but you too will get that. So that's a goal of McGill. For you to graduate and for you to be happy in the process. But that's not the only goal that McGill has for you. It's not just the goal of getting good grades and graduating, and it shouldn't be the only goal for you as well. The real success for McGill and how they measure their success as a university is whether or not they're able to create an environment that gives you an opportunity to finish the job of growing up. Now, many of you might wonder about that because a lot of you probably think, well, what the heck? We're already pretty much grown up here. What are you talking about? I had a son when he was going through university. He thought he was totally grown up. He knew everything in the world. I knew nothing, you know, it was that kind of thing. But I knew that he was not finished growing up for the same reason I know that you are not finished growing up, and that is simply because you have not had enough time yet. You have not had enough time to have the life experiences that really allow one to grow up. And your time here at McGill, the years that you spend at McGill, are going to provide you with a number of those important life experiences that are going to take you forward in that process of growing up. Think of yourselves as the cake. You're already baked and beautiful and delicious. McGill is the icing that you are going to be able to put on that cake. Some of the things that you are going to have an opportunity to do while you are here are things like finding out who you are. Young people your age are in the process of developing their identity, and this experience that you will have here is going to allow you to do that if you want to take advantage of it, so that you will become more of a person, you will discover who you really are over the course of the next few years. It's going to give you a real opportunity to challenge your ideas and your beliefs, because everybody comes at this point in their life, they come to a university with a set of beliefs, a set of things, the way they deal with things in their life, and because of the diversity of this relationship, you are going to have an opportunity to take a very close look at that, to really ask yourself some questions about some of the core values of your life, some of your behaviors. You're going to be able to challenge many of those things as a result of being in this environment. You may have an opportunity to discover what's really important to you. Most of us, when you ask somebody what's important to you, right away they're going to say, well, you know, money, and maybe being famous. But those things, when you get to talk to people a little bit more deeply, you find that those aren't always the things that are most important. They have underlying values that come to the fore. And this environment and the people you will interact with and the education you will have, all of that will allow you to really discover what's important to you, again, if you take advantage of it. And finally, it's going to allow you to learn how to think critically, to become a critical thinker, to have your own say about all the different options and propaganda and opinions that the world is going to throw at you. And it is a world, I would add, that you are about soon to inherit. Many people at McGill want these to be the best years of your life. And they can be. And the reason these years can be the best years of your life are seated all around you. Never again will you have an opportunity to be in the same place with so many talented, intelligent, young, vital people. Never again will you be in an environment surrounded by so much knowledge and so many different ideas. It's a wonderful opportunity to engage yourself in real learning and interactions with other people who are very much like you. In the next few years, you're going to be given a great opportunity. You are going to be given an opportunity to create a foundation for your future. And not just a foundation about getting a job. All of you are going to get a job. All of you are going to be able to buy the car and the house. All that is taken for granted. We know that's going to happen for you because you are successful people. You are intelligent people. We know that's going to happen. But this is more than that. What you're going to get an opportunity to do is set a foundation to be happy with your life, to be happy with the choices that you will be making over the next few years. Those choices you will be making while you are here will contribute to the kind of destiny that you have for yourself, because destiny is not something that falls in your lap. Destiny is something that you work at, that you plan, and that you contribute to. So you will be operating in a way, you have this opportunity to create that destiny for yourself. So McGill is a big step forward. It's a chance for you to throw off some of your old habits, to choose or to clarify the next step in your life and the direction that you will be taking. Now, when we talk about choices, there are two, I think, very important choices that we make when we are young. The first is the work that you do, the career you follow. There's a saying, we get married to our jobs. And really, it's true when you think about it. Once you're on a career track, once you're out in the world of work, you may be working 40 hours a week for 30, 40 years. So you're investing a lot of your time into your career, into your job. You may spend more time with your career than you do with your partner or with your children or with your friends. So you want that partnership, you want that marriage to your job to be a good one. You just don't want to take anything because very soon you will become bored and dissatisfied with it. So you want to be able, while you are here, to keep your options open. Unless you're one of the lucky ones who knows exactly what you want to do in life, if you're like most of us with a little bit of confusion still, you want to keep your options open. You want to take courses that are interesting to you. If you can possibly be interested, it's a high motivational factor. You want to be able to enjoy what you're doing and enhance the talents that you have. All of those things are important in terms of setting yourself up for a marriage, to a job, and a career that's going to work for you over the next number of decades. And I suggest that you think about it now. What happens over in a counseling service is at the end of the third or fourth year that people are here, people come to us and they say, I really don't know what to do now. I've got my degree, but I'm unsure what to do. And that's because they really haven't spent time thinking about why they're here and what they want to do and where they want to go. So what we have over in student services as a collaboration between the counseling service and the career service is a program called PACE. And PACE is a four-week, 2.5-hour sessions, once each for 4 weeks, that allows people to look at their abilities, it allows them to look at their interests, it allows them to look at their personalities and their value system, and it helps them to decide where they want to go in the future, and that can help them make decisions about what they are studying and the kinds of courses they will follow when they're here. Now, the second decision, and one I think is even more important than the first, is who you spend your life with. The friends you make while you are here, the romances you have while you are here. There is ample opportunity for all of that. But in order to take advantage of that, you've really got to be aware of the social rules that exist. I'll tell you all a little thing. I was teaching social psychology a few years ago, and I knew what was going to happen on the first day of class. I was going to go into the classroom and everybody was going to be deadly silent. They're all going to be in their own little world, you know, doing this, that, not looking at each other, not talking, you know, spread out as much as possible. I said, no. I'm going to do something about this. That's a lesson in social psychology. So I went into the classroom and I said, okay, I'm the teacher of the class here, but, I'm going to go and get a cup of coffee before I start. And I'm going to give you a little assignment while I'm out getting that coffee. And I said, your assignment is to talk to the person next to you. Introduce yourself if you don't know them. Tell a little bit about yourself. Get a little bit of knowledge about them. And then when I come back, you're going to have to tell me about that other person. That was their first assignment in the class. And then I left the classroom, but I didn't go and get a cup of coffee. I just stood behind the door waiting. And pretty soon, the noise level started to grow, and the noise started to grow, and people started to talk and interact with each other. And when I came back in a few minutes later, I couldn't get their attention anymore. I had to stand there waving, because everybody was busy, engaged, talking to one another. And I said to them, look, all you have to do is break that social rule that you go into a place and you don't look around and you don't say anything to anybody, and you sit in your little isolated spot. You just needed my permission to do that, and look how easy it was. In a few minutes, you were able to know somebody in the class, engage, talk to them, share some information. Don't wait for somebody to do that. Do it yourself. And from that point on, there was never any quietness in that classroom, and people got to know people all over the place. Now, why does that happen? I think that kind of social isolation that happens when we don't know people, when we're strangers, happens because we're afraid of rejection. And my advice to you is don't be afraid of rejection. Rejection is good. Look for rejection. Enjoy it if you can. Rejection is normal. If I go down to St. Catherine Street after this talk, and I stand on St. Catherine Street, and I start asking ladies to go out for coffee with me, 80% of them are going to run away. A couple may try to slap me. Most will give me a strange look. But one, statistically speaking, one out of that 100 will go out for coffee with me. And I'll have made a friend. So I suggest that to you. Remember the guy that was a baseball player a number of years ago, Babe Ruth. Some of you may have heard of him. But he was the king of home runs. Played for the New York Yankees. He was the king of home runs. And we know about that. He's in the record books. But he was also, and this is less well known, he was also the king of strikeouts. He struck out more than anybody else in baseball simply because every time they threw something at him, he swung the bat. And more often than not, he missed. But because he was swinging so much, he hit the most home runs. He made the home run record. And that is my suggestion to you. Don't be afraid of striking out. Don't be afraid of swinging. The more swinging that you do, the more home runs you're going to hit. So if you want a hot date on Saturday night, you've got to go around asking people and deal with any rejection that you might encounter. Because if you do it often enough, you're going to get that date, or you're going to make that friend, or you're going to have that cup of coffee with somebody. Could you stand up for a second? I won't embarrass you. What's your name?
Andrea.
What a lovely name. The fellow in the purplish shirt. Could you stand up for a second? He was laughing when I said Andrea. What's your name?
Forrest.
What?
Forrest.
B? Forrest? That is a wonderful name. It has a certain ring to it. But can you imagine? Here's Forrest. Here's Andrea. Forrest and Andrea. Andrea. Andrea and Forrest. It has a certain ring to it. I can see somebody writing a book with their names in the title. It's going to be a romance novel. They might even make a movie about Andrea and Forrest, starring Brad Pitt and Angelina. And for all, but just by looking at them, I would say, don't you think that these two people could make beautiful babies together? They could be the greatest love story since Romeo and Juliet. People would talk about them for years, for eons, but it may not happen. Because Forrest is sitting over there with his buddy, and you are sitting over here with your girlfriend, and they may never meet. They might pass in the night like ships, never seeing one each other, simply because they didn't take the opportunity to approach each other, to say hi, to shake hands, to try to make a friend. Keep that in mind. Somewhere in this audience, somewhere in this university, maybe the love of your life, and it's up to you to go out there and find them. Let me give you a few hints of what to do. One of the things about students in classrooms is they like to come and sit in a particular seat. And you never know why they do it. You know, you never know why the eager beavers are up front or the slackers are in the back. But what we do know is that once somebody is sat in a seat in a classroom, they tend to come back and sit in the same seat. It's almost like they've carved their name in the seat. This is my seat. This is where I sit. And if you sit in their seat, they'll sit beside you and glare at you. and get to the next class early so they can get their seat back. And what I say is, don't do that. Don't be a creature of habit. It's easy to do that. But you lose advantage of the opportunities when you do that. What you want to do is you want to change seats every time you go into a classroom. You get a different perspective. You see the professor from a different line. But the most important thing is that you get then to be with different people in the classroom during each class. And it's a great advantage, because what you do is you go into the classroom, you sit in a new seat, you go wait till somebody sits near you, then you reach out your hand and you say, "Hi, I'm Ted." Well, your own name's good too, if you use it. When you reach out your hand, they reach out to shake your hand, they smile, you get their name, and it's the beginning of a friendship. So every class that you go to, if you have 13 classes, you can engage with 13 different people. So when you need their notes or you need somebody to study with for the exam, they're available to you. And you have a social life, and you can begin to meet outside of the classroom as well. There's another thing I would advise you to do, and this has to do with elevators. There are elevators in McGill, and some people get to ride them. Don't waste these opportunities. What is it about elevators? There's a social rule for elevators. When people get on an elevator, what they do is they all go into the elevator, they all turn facing the door, they all stand still, they all watch the floors go by. Don't join them. What I have done in the past and what I suggest to you is you politely let everybody get on the elevator. And when they're all on, you get on standing facing them. And then you smile. And they all step back, and you have all this room in the elevator. And because people are often on the same schedules the next day, you come to the elevator, and of course there's nobody there because they don't want to ride with you anymore. But if you do it often enough, they get used to you, and they understand that you're not there to harm them. And pretty soon when you smile, somebody smiles back and you reach out your hand and you say, "Hi, I'm Ted." And pretty soon you have lots of friends on the elevator. The choices that you are going to make start here and now. What you choose to study, what friendships you make, what romances you have, the person you become in the next few years, these will be determined by the choices you make and will also determine how you spend much of the rest of your life. What you study, the friends you make, your experiences here are likely to determine how you spend much of the rest of your life. You have a gift, and I say this from the perspective of time. You have a gift. You have the gift of youth. You have the gift of energy. You have the gift of beauty and intelligence. Don't waste that gift. Use it to your advantage. You have time and opportunity to think, to plan, and to make choices that will be good for you. I say this because I don't want you to do it my way. I say this from experience, because when I went to that school that had no support systems and I stumbled through, I got my degree. I got a degree in English literature, and I went into English because it was the only thing I was good at. And my English teacher in high school let me sit at the back of the classroom and do my math homework, which I wasn't good at, because I always got an A in English. So when it was time to go to university, I said, "Okay, I'll be an English major. I'll get to read good books. I'll write a few papers. It'll be easy." And it was. I had a great time. But I got to graduation with this degree in English literature, and I didn't know what to do with it. I didn't know where to go. I didn't have any plans. I was a lost boy. At 22, I was a lost boy. And what do you do when you're a lost boy at 22? You go to a fortune teller. I don't advise it. There was a little circus thing was set up in a parking lot near where I was living. I went in, paid my quarter, went into a tent, and there was an old lady in the tent, nice old lady, quite clever now that I think about it. She had a towel on her head, or a turban or something. And we had a little bit of a conversation, and she was kind of like an amateur psychologist. She was asking me questions about this and about that. But really, I was trying to get from her for my 25 cents. I really wanted to know, what should I do with the rest of my life? This was a critical question for me as a lost boy. What do I do with the rest of my life? And she looked at me solemnly, and she put her hands on the turban towel. And she said, "Ted, what would make you happy?" And I thought, oh, that's a very good question. This is a critical, essential question. What would make you happy? A question I think you should all ask yourselves. What would make you happy? And the first thing that came into my mind was beer and girls and money. But I didn't want to say that to her, so I thought a little bit more deeply. And finally, because I was still didn't have really time to investigate, I said, well, I think that I'll be happy if in some way I can help people. I didn't know how, I didn't know what, but if I can help people in some way, it'll probably bring me a certain degree of happiness. And so she again put her fingers on her head and said, "Ted, you will find happiness by keeping others from becoming lost." And that confused me. I thought, what, she wants me to be a tour guide? A forest ranger? What the hell was she talking about? But she wouldn't give me any more for my 25 cents. And it wasn't until many years later, when I became a teacher, when I became a therapist, when I became a counselor, that I realized that she had hit the button right on the head. She hit the nail on the head, because when I finally got to a position where I could help people from becoming lost, not physically, but in terms of their development, in terms of their psychology, that I could be happy in the career that I chose. My goal nowadays is to keep you from becoming lost, to get off on the right foot, to stay ahead, to make this semester and this first year the best possible, as successful as possible, and as a foundation for your whole experience here and for the rest of your life. But because this is my goal, I worry. And you would say, well, why? What are you worried about? You just told us we're beautiful, we're intelligent, we're successful. What could you possibly be worried about? And I tell you that I'm worried because university, as wonderful a place as it is not a bed of roses. There are pitfalls, there are traps that people fall into, sometimes because they don't see them coming, sometimes because something comes out of left field. But there's always, in the counseling service and in mental health services, there's always difficulties that people experience every year because something has happened unexpectedly to them. So I do worry. The very things that you have to do while you are here at university, such as establishing your identity, making good relationships, finding direction in your life, building your self-esteem, all of those things are wonderful things that you have to pursue, but they do create stress. They don't happen automatically. There's always anxiety related to that, along with all the smaller things that you guys have to take care of, like your homework and doing your laundry. All of that stuff can add up and sometimes throw people off the track. Research has shown us that adjustment and difficulties are most likely to be experienced in a student's first year at university. And that really makes sense when you think about it, because first-year students are dealing with new people, new relationships, new experiences, finding their place in the university. There's lots of opportunities for something to go wrong. And I would just share with you some of the common difficulties that we know happen to young people in their first year of university. Number one is getting enough sleep. Please make sure that you get enough sleep. It's very difficult to be academically successful if you're sleep deprived, and we know that most students are. It's very hard to go to an early morning class when you've been up too late at night and keep your eyes open And it's just so long that you can hide in the back with your eyes closed before the professor discovers you're sleeping back there. So be careful about that. Managing your time. I would warn you right off the bat that McGill has a 13-week semester. It's shorter than most things you will encounter academically. You will be surprised at how fast time goes here. You will spin around a couple of times, and it will be off the middle of October, and you will be in midterms. And you will say, "Why did that happen? I just got here." You have to learn how to manage your time well. One of the busiest time for counseling is at the end of each semester. Just before December exams, just before April exams, we are overwhelmed. Last year we had a 6-week waiting list for people who wanted to come in at the end of term. And most of it was because they had not been able to keep up with the work. And the mountain had grown so large that they did not think they were going to be able to handle it. Often what happens, and this is an unfortunate circumstance, but sometimes, every year, somebody will come into my office to talk to me, and they're on their last day of class, and the next day is their first exam. And 2 days after that is their second exam, and they have two on the same day. So there's not a lot of intervening time between the end of classes and when exams start. So if you haven't kept up with the work right until the end of term, then you don't have time to study for your exams. So you have to be aware of time management. And you have to be aware of the amount of work that's going to be asked of you. Professors all think somehow that they're the only one that you're taking a class with. So they can give you as much work as they want to, because what the heck, it's only one class. But you multiply that by 5, and you've got more work than you can handle. So you've got to start from the very beginning, adjusting to the amount of work that you have to do to keep on top of things in that 13-week semester. You need to take good notes. One of the mistakes a lot of students make is they buy a textbook, and they're very expensive, and they buy a yellow marker, and their notes are basically underlining things in yellow. And usually what they're doing is they're turning a nice black and white book into a black and yellow book. And when they go to review, they have so much to review, it's like starting over again. So you really need a system where you can condense all of that material in every course to a few cogent notes. And when you look at those notes, all that information comes out for you right away without having you to go back and start from the beginning. You have to have good effective skills. Now, ironically enough, one of the problems with McGill students is that you're all so damn bright. And sometimes, because you're bright, you've been able to slide by a little bit. Sometimes you've been able to get here without really doing that much hard work. You've got a great memory. You know, some people have photographic memories. They just look at something and they remember it. So they don't have to do a lot of work. Some of you can absorb a lot of stuff at the last moment. So you procrastinate and you do things at the just before a paper is due, you write it. Or just before an exam, you try to study it. And you've gotten away with that. You've got good grades and you've got in here. But I can tell you it's really hard to do that here. It's really hard to slide by because the workload is big and because the standards are high. Everybody in your class is as smart as you are. So the level of work is very high. So unless you're doing what they're doing, it's pretty hard to stay on that level. So effective study skills are necessary. If you're studying a subject and you don't do as well as you'd like, is it because you haven't studied effectively? Check that out. There's a number of different ways of studying. You have to study one way for one subject, another way for another. You may have to modify your study skills, how you approach things. Lots of material available on that. If that's your problem, fix it early. Making new friends and relationships. You've got to balance your old life and your new life. You've got to hang on to what you've had in the past and what you're bringing forward, but you've got to engage yourself in the social and relationship environment of McGill. You've got to find the appropriate balance. You've got to make sure that you're living a holistic kind of life, that you're doing social things as well as academic things, that you're staying physically fit. All of that wholeness is very important over the long term. And finally, language. If you're studying in a second language, if English is not your first language, you may be at a bit of a disadvantage. because the level of writing here can be very good for native speakers, and you may have to work a little harder, a little more effectively than people whose first language may be English. There are three things I would tell you to do in the broad sense. One is to be aware. Know what the challenges are for you at this university. Everybody's going to have unique challenges. Some people might be procrastinators. Some people might have trouble getting into an 8:30 class because they can't get up in the morning. Some people might have study skills problems. Find out what the challenges are for you. Find out what challenges the university will put in front of you, like the 13-week semester. It really keeps the pace up. Understand and be aware of those challenges. Find out what you can do to avoid and deal with them in advance, early on, early detection, like a medical diagnosis. If you can diagnose something early, something can be done more effectively than if it is diagnosed too late. If somebody comes to me at the end of the semester, and believe me, this has happened, and they haven't been to class for the last month of school, we have a hard time saving their skins at that point. But if they've come in early and we detect a problem, things can be put in place to make sure that that doesn't happen. And know the resources available at McGill. You have paid a student service fee, quite a bit of money, for the services. And they are there for you to take advantage of them. If you don't need them, fine. But if you do, remember they are there and they don't cost you anything. Minimal cost for a couple of things, but most of those services are free. And in the outside world, many of those services would cost a small fortune. So if you need them, do not hesitate to take advantage of them. And over on McTavish Street, we have the Brown Building. And in the Brown Building are all of the student services that are available, all mostly in that one building. They're all there. I would suggest that you go over there sometime now, in the next day or two, because they have set up information booths, and all of their pamphlets and all of their information and all of their telephone and email addresses are there that you can collect and take with you, put on your fridge, save just in case you need them. All of those things are there. All of them are available. And we, as student service professionals, are available to help you in any way that we can. So please, take that to heart and remember that. Once again, thank you very much for coming to McGill. I really am glad and happy that you're here. I hope this really is a good semester and a good first year. And I personally look forward to seeing you in the very near future walking across the stage at your own graduation. Thank you. Have a great day.